Hi everybody, and thank you so much for joining me on this latest Gilbert's LLP video. Today on the show, Tim tells me a little bit about a solution he brought to Congress that united both sides of the aisle, and a little bit about a jog that he'll never forget. This is a good one. Stick around. Tim, in a previous episode, you mentioned having visited the White House Rose Garden, and I think we absolutely need to hear more about that story. Can you tell us more about what you were doing on that day?
Well, let me tell you about what the problem was first. And this backs up. So the Rose Garden visit was the culmination of about a two and a half year battle. It started with being asked a question. I was down at a conference in front of the Federal Trade Commission, and one of the new attorneys there, they just hired a patent attorney, and she came up to me and said, "You're Canadian, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, well, there's this company out of Canada that's, you know, got a problem. Would you mind talking to me about it?" And of course, being the kind of character I am, I said, "Yes, absolutely." Didn't actually know what the problem was at the time, but I was happy to chat. And that got me engaged in this intractable problem with in the patent world and legal disputes, which seemed to go on forever. And the FTC was looking at this as a possible anti-competitive behavior, but they didn't know how to stop it either. So industry was interested in this. There were different proposals in front of Congress and bills, very complex things. Senator Schumer, Senator McCain were looking at trying to solve this problem. And I looked at it and I thought, you know, back to, you know, Sun Tzu, The Art of War, anything that is long and complex is unlikely to be successful. So I had that in my mind. They'd already been battling for 5 years. And of course, nobody had penetrated this yet. And then I don't know if City Slickers was out yet, the movie, but of course, at the end of the movie, the protagonist says the secret to life is one thing. He didn't say what that is, but every problem has a single solution to it. So I was driven to get rid of the complexity and come up with a very simple solution to solve the problem, which is what I recommended. And so that sounds great. I have a solution, and normally could write an article about it, and hopefully somebody embraces it. But my job, though, was going to be to actually implement that. I had a solution, which was to fix a loophole in the law, and then I had to go out and do it.
So yeah, let's get into the how and what exactly your solution was.
Well, the solution to the problem to me was companies could sue on each patent that came out and start a whole piece of litigation. And what the behavior of companies with patents was to time the issuance of patents, which are things preventing other companies from using that invention, serially time them so that every 8 months to a year or more, a new patent would come out supposedly claiming the same thing as before. And you could say, how could they do that? Well, it takes a long time to untangle that in the court system, and very complex. So, and each time they sued, they would by law get an injunction preventing anybody from selling that same product. So this was like a daisy chain of injunctions preventing people from bringing products out, and that's why they lasted so long. So my simple solution was to say there should be only one injunction, one shot at preventing people from getting into the market, one shot to clear all of the patent thicket that was out there. And after that, if you want to sue, you can go ahead and sue. So that seemed like a simple thing to implement. But of course, there were huge stakes, billions of dollars being fought on either side to prevent this. Again, my job was to figure out a way to get that implemented.
So trace this path for us. How do you get from there to spending the day at the Rose Garden at the White House?
So there were a lot of people interested in this thing, and I ended up becoming kind of like the emissary of the Canadian company that was vitally interested. And I got very involved in the effort to change the law. So how do you change the law? Well, the first thing is, you got to visit the people in Congress who were making these decisions and putting laws together. And it was remarkably simple to get into Congress. I couldn't believe it. I was this Canadian guy And I got a phone call saying, "Oh, would you come and speak to me?" It was from Senator Schumer's office. And it's like, how do you know? Well, I heard that you're a guy who knows something about this. Another person, former President Clinton's healthcare advisor, called me as well. It's like, well, you know, can you help me work on this? Like, and my answer was, well, surely there must be people in Washington who know this stuff. It's your healthcare system, your acts, your everything, all these brainiacs and who do this. And I remember he said, overestimate the expertise in Washington on any particular issue. We're very thin. We're a mile wide and an inch deep, and we need you to go deeper. So I was then sent off with the blessing of a Canadian client to then help Congress solve this problem. I was introduced as an expert on healthcare. And I gave interviews. I walked in the door. At that time, there wasn't quite the security as now. You still had kind of like an airport security. And then I had these interviews in these offices where you worked, not with the senator, but you learned you worked with the aides, the people right out of school, sometimes meeting in cafeterias. That's where the real work of Congress goes on, and educating them and thinking about the problems they had, and building a team that would, you know, fashion a solution. So there was a legislative strategy we developed, though. It involved hearings before Congress, and involved us mining, actually the early days of the internet, information out there about the strategies being used. And I remember one of the things we found being a huge exhibit in Congress that portrayed what the real strategies were. We also, though, solicited a broader strategy. We called it a grass top strategy. And that was to get leadership from media, from other public interest groups, not so much as a formal coalition, but speaking out on this issue, embracing it. AARP, American Association of Retired People, supported what we were doing. And then one day I woke up and I remember the firm I was at said, "You spend an awful lot of time reading the newspaper." And I said, "Well, because we're in it." The New York Times had published an editorial embracing this solution. The Wall Street Journal endorsed the solution. It was unbelievable. The Washington Post. So you're having this kind of rising tide of support saying enough is enough. This has to end. And with that, you know, kind of approach of building consensus around this solution, that's when I got the call from the security for the White House saying there, we would like you to come to the White House, and the president will be speaking from the Rose Garden. I had to wait to hear what he said, which was he had embraced this solution. And I, of course, had never met the president. It was President Bush at the time. This, you know, little Canadian kid, whatever, ends up coming up with something that was quite dramatic.
And what year did this happen?
I believe it was around 2003, something like that. And it ultimately got adopted. It was a cabinet decision at the time, an issuance of an executive directive. And then the Medicare Modernization Act created changes to allow greater access to Medicaid in the United States. It formalized it into a final bill of Congress. It was the first change since 1984 at the time to the system for approval of drug products. People just assumed you couldn't do it. But it happened. It's a matter of record.
Did you ever end up meeting the president? Or
I met the head of the FDA, which was, for me, you know, as you find in these things, pretty cool. He was a cabinet member. He was very thankful for the people who had put this together.
You know, I'm actually surprised to hear that security was not incredibly tight. It being, you know, a post 9/11 world and everything.
I mean, everyone has a 9/11 story, but I was so often in Washington at the time. I stayed at the hotel called the Hay Adams, right across from the White House, right across from Lafayette Park. And on the morning of 9/11, I went for a run along the side of the White House, down to the Potomac River, around the Pentagon, and came back And then behind me, there was smoke rising. And I came in and, I got a phone call saying, turn on your TV. And there, of course, was the news at what had happened. And I was my first year. I just started the firm. 2001, I had one articling student right out of law school, and she was with me on this trip. And I said, you got to pack your bags. We've got to get out of here. And we went down. Our room was commandeered by, I believe it was a TV station like ABC News, took over the spot because you could see the White House, and we could see people streaming across from the White House through Lafayette Park to get away from everything. And we jumped in. I commandeered a cab and said, just get out of here. go to the suburbs. And, in quite dramatic fashion, we were out of there. So it was a change. Of course, 9/11 changed a lot in how America looked at the world. But fortunately, they remained open to creative ideas and solutions. Even though as Canadian, we continued to work with the States.
What was your biggest takeaway from that day in the Rose Garden? From bringing this one solution forward, how did that affect you moving forward as a person and as a lawyer?
Well, I felt that, again, I use the term honest broker, that the more you're seen as objective and reasonable, which is, we like to think of that as Canadians, right? Are the biggest charge against Canadians, we're too reasonable, too polite. People generally have that. And I think it is a cultural thing. And when we're in Washington, it's so divided along party lines, along belief structures. When you come in and say, they ask, what party are you with? And I say, well, I can't, I'm not American, I'm Canadian. It's disarming. Because they then all have some kind of, some kind of association. Are you from the frozen north? Are you from where you're from? And you can relate and, break. I think that helps to break barriers, actually, is just not being part of that divided, that division that is there. And you look for solutions. And I think one of the things that's, even despite the partisanship in America, there are things that go on that you don't hear about. Bills are move ahead. Changes to different aspects of commerce and society do happen where both sides of the aisle work together. And I think that's, it's unfortunate that the media focuses only on the divisions and not what brings people together. And I think that's where we work. We work best on both sides of the aisle, finding common solutions and moving the ball forward.
If you could speak to the Tim Gilbert of 2003 or 2001 or even further back, would there be any specific knowledge or bits of advice you would impart on him if you could?
Well, I still think that creative solutions are somewhat in short supply. A lot of times things get developed from positions, and I think it's important to stop talking from positional bargaining and more into problem solving and getting at things that both can embrace. And it's hard because your belief structure doesn't want you to think that the other side, so to speak, has anything to say. We continued even after we had that example. We had another example of working with Congress, and it looked like on a problem there was no solution. There was no position for the other side. And if you spend enough time with people, you start to get in behind their concerns and try to come up with that solution. So I think that's it: openness and problem solving.